7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 63 of Color of Magic. I am your host, Taquan Watson, and we're getting close to the end of the year, but you know what? I still have my man, Brian Allen, here. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing all right, man. I had to get out and do some last-minute shopping for a couple of food things or whatever, but, you know, I survived those crowds, and I'm pretty sure because of where I live, I didn't come back with the COVID, so that's good.
I'm glad to hear you're sure. We're still fingers crossed every time we go out in Texas.
Man, I'll tell you, like, even right now when we're going to look at houses, like, there's a process. Like, they have to assign you an exact person who has to be there. Like, you have exactly a certain amount of time to get in and out of a house because they're lining up everything systematically. Like, you don't touch hardly anything. You know, they have somebody there. Some of the houses have somebody there even, like, wiping stuff down after you're gone. Like,
wow.
They're being very serious. I mean, they're not messing around.
Now, when we sold ours, it's like a lot of the regulations here in Texas. In theory, there was a process. There were written rules that we were told people were going to obey, and we saw on a couple of occasions, we'd come back, you know, as people were leaving our house, and nobody has a mask. Nobody is taking a mask off. It's just,
oh no, dude. Like, every realtor, every associate, everybody is masked up. You know, I haven't shaken. We looked at 6 or 7 houses. I didn't shake anybody's hand. I think one person I fist bumped and that was it. Like, for real. Like, up here, everybody's serious about it.
That's probably why your numbers are where they are. Well, how is Washington on?
We're still, like the rest of the country, we are trending. Well, we were trending up until like this most recent week, but we also started getting vaccines out. So we'll talk about that later. But generally, we're actually not doing too bad. Like, Eastern Washington is atrocious, but that's basically like Southern country Texas. I mean, like, it just is. Western Washington, around like the bigger cities and stuff, tends to be doing a bit better. But we have a lot to cover, a lot of things we kind of want to talk about. We're going to be all over the place topic-wise this week because we have a few different things to discuss that don't necessarily go together. But before we get into all of that, let's remind everybody that they can support the show by going to patreon.com/colorofmagic. For a whole whopping $2 a month, and you'll get a handwritten card. Matter of fact, I just put 2 postcards in the mail the other day, though they're probably being slowed up because of the mail, I have another priority package that hasn't moved for 4 days now. So I have no idea when you're going to get your postcards, but they're in the mail, I promise. But it does help us keep the lights on, take care of trying to get some guests in here going into the new year, and a few other things we're working on. And we also have a show sponsor, Cardsphere.com. And, you know, they're a great place to sell your stuff. Sell it at the price you want. It's a great place if you're looking to buy cards, to buy at the price you want. And let's say you get past Christmas, you realize you overspent a little bit, those credit card bills are going to be coming due. You can go ahead and sell some stuff you got sitting around up on Cardsphere. Cover those bills. You'll have the money in about a week's time. It's a quick turnaround. You don't have to worry about it. Check them out. Cardsphere.com. All right. So now, you know, I think we're going to give them another double dose of the soapbox here. So mine's kind of a short one. So I'm going to go first here. But I saw something earlier before we went live for recording. That people have vanity COVID plates for their cars. That is the most ignorant, well, maybe not, but it's up there for ignorant country things you can do. And every plate was like Alabama, Texas, whatever, right? Like, none of them, they're in the places you expected them to be. But it was like, one was just said like Mr. COVID. Another one was, I think, just said COVID-19. I think one said Cove hoax, C-O-V hoax is what it was. Oh my God. It's just like, who's even approving these license plates? Like, I know when you go get vanity plates, they check it for all kinds of random things. Who wants somebody having that on their car? Like, what does that do? And then, like, let's say you do get that. How dumb do you look like a year from now? Or 2 years from now? Like, I don't even understand. Like, I get it. It's arrogance. It's carelessness. It's lack of empathy. Like, all that stuff. I get it. But, like, that's just... That one, if you... When, what was that shit? That one just grinds my gears. You know, that's what that feels like. When I say. There you go. That's what it feels like, man. When I saw that, I was like, really? Like, and at first, I was like, okay, there's just an idiot doing it. And then there were threads on multiple sites I was on. And they had like, oh, no, I saw this one last week. Or I saw this one last month. I'm like, not only that, think about how fast that had to happen. Like, your plates or whatever need to be renewed or changed. Or you're getting a new vehicle sometime, I'm assuming, between like February and June-ish. And then you roll in and are like, I know the plate I want for this truck. And there were, actually, you know what? I think I only saw one on a car. They were all on like trucks or SUVs. I don't think about it, 'cause one was even a Denali. So yeah. And
the trucks had really big tires.
At least one of them did. I don't remember the others, 'cause I don't think I got a wide enough shot on a lot of them. But yeah. Anyway, I just figured if there was a thing to be on the soapbox about, that's definitely one of them. Anyway, Brian, I'm told you also have to, like, yell at some people about something. What you got?
Yeah, multiple sources, including the New York Times, are reporting that still for at least the next 28 days or so, President Trump was considering the idea of declaring martial law and rerunning the election, but only in the states that he lost. How does that work? That defies all known logic of the way elections are supposed to. We're gonna do the election again, but just in like these five or six states here where I need votes. That nothing about that makes sense.
Yeah, like the whole argument anyway of just like, oh no, the states where I won, everything there was great. The states where I lost, those are the ones where there was a problem. Like, you know how the level of arrogance that takes? Like, to just say, like, well, magically, somehow, those problems did not infiltrate these other states. And it doesn't matter if your state has Republican governors or Democratic governors or whatever. Just where I won, no problems. Where I lost, all the problems. Like, come on. And people wonder, like, why he did not have the full support of the military. Like, you're talking about just martial law over this? Like, come on. Like, it's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. Well, all right, Brian, with that being said, what did you learn last week?
As we've mentioned on here, and some of you that follow us on Alan's Ever After are aware, we've been doing Vlogmas, and basically I've learned, you know, what Daquan is putting himself through every day, because... Drop in, and for those of you that don't know, Vlogmas is where you upload some manner of video every day for the 25 days of Christmas. And yeah, it's a beating.
Yeah, I don't think people understand. You know, like I said, I talk to people all the time that are like, should I do a video every day? Whatever. It's like, honestly, no. I mean, I tell people, like, but this comes all the way back to me doing like that 60 days of stream thing, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm almost putting myself through the physical challenge so other people don't. Like, you could live through me, talk to me about it. Don't do that to yourself.
I've heard many other content creators say the same thing. It's just like, you can, but just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should.
Yeah, I would say this. Like, the biggest thing is, if you were going to do it, this year was the time to do it. Because with COVID... And the pandemic, everybody's sitting at home. You have more time. You're not going out. You don't have that commute from work. So you have this extra, let's say, 2 hours average per day that you wouldn't have necessarily. But as we get to back to some level of normalcy with the vaccines and stuff, you're just not going to have that time anymore. So that's why if you talk to a lot of people, they'll tell you 2 to 3 videos a week is generally what a lot of them recommend. Like 3 being the sweet spot, but a minimum of 2 just to keep traffic circulating through your channel and build up, you know, regularly. But yeah, I definitely would recommend it. I didn't know it was a thing though. I thought that was something y'all were just doing.
No, if you look up like who started Vlogmas, because I can't remember the young lady's name, but there's one vlogger that I guess was one of the first people to do it and that went, you know, got a lot of traffic. And now it's a thing that a lot of YouTubers do, especially in the family genre.
Man, I missed out. Maybe I'll do it next year. I'll do something like History of a Magic Card every day.
You upload a video every day anyway, almost. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I could have done a specific, like, you know, history of magic tournaments or history of magic cards or whatever, and just do a cool one every day that was themed, but I didn't even think about it.
Cause at one point we thought about like doing it for both of our channels no.
Well, you know, as far as what I learned last week, it's that actually, okay, let me tell you how I got here. Like I put up a tweet that just asked people, what do you classify as budget and arena? Because budget and paper is easy, right? You can just set a dollar value, whether it's under $50, under $100. Can you build this magic deck, right? If you just walked in, could you build a magic deck without like breaking your bank after payday? Well, it's not really the same for arena. And the more I asked around, everybody had a different answer. And some people were like, oh, well, you know, as long as it has less than 10 rares or less than 10 total rares and mythics. Some were, well, it can have up to 6 mythics, but less than 4 rares. Like, there was all these weird mix and match things. And then there were people that were like, well, it's budget if it has stuff for, like, staples that you can put in other decks and blah. And then some people not understanding that, like, a lot of people who want a budget deck just want to build a deck. They're not building 10 or 12 decks. They don't care about staples, right? So the conversation got all over the place. So what I learned is 2 things. One, people have no idea what to classify as budget and arena. Everybody has a different explanation, which is fine. I think the biggest issue is that a lot of them are trying to equate paper magic normal money economy to a digital magic money economy, and they're not the same.
Not at all.
It's okay that they're not the same. They're just not the same. But the other thing was that there's people who have no idea how the hell to stay on topic. I was asking specifically because I'm like, hey, if I was thinking about doing content or directing people to certain sources or helping people out, what should I be doing when somebody says, I'm looking for a budget deck? Effectively what I was asking, right? But you had people that are like, well, the arena economy is broken because of this, and I should be able to buy this thing and blah, blah. And I'm like, what does that have to do with like a donkey's butt? Like this has nothing to do with anything. Like that's not the question. Like a lot. And here's the thing I want to say, like if somebody, especially a content creator or a business, is posting a question that is something to do with their field of expertise, they're probably looking for legit information. When you derail those conversations, you're doing everybody involved who actually wants that answer or wants help with that thing a disservice. So I want to throw that out there because I would say realistically, if I go back through that thread, it's probably about 60 to 70% was helpful and the rest is people just arguing economic semantics. Like, so I got kind of what I wanted out of it, but still. But yeah, Brian, speaking of magic, because that's what we're doing right now. Did you check out that Kaldheim trailer? Or teaser, I guess it is. What is an actual trailer?
What is the difference between a teaser and a trailer? Is there? I guess that's a question for another Daquan's Twitter feed. But yeah, I did see it.
So I can tell you, a teaser... In terms of movies, you have what they call the hype reel or sizzle reel, which is basically where you get two or three quick shots, maybe showing you who's in the movie or whatever, and then the logo pops up with some like dramatic music or something, right? Then you have the teaser that is kind of like what you saw this summer for the DC stuff, talking about like Black Adam coming or whatever, but they gave you like a snippet of a shadow, and then you had the DC logo coming in, and you know, like, okay, so they're telling you what it is, but they're not really filling in the gaps yet. Just enough of a story to say like, hey, here's what's happening. Then you get the full trailer. So this feels like a teaser, because it's like, hey, here's the background. Here's a hint at like the undertone music, and you kind of get a glimpse at a character, and that's about it, right? We don't know the rest yet. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, to back to your original question, as we talk about people derailing topics, but I did see it. Pretty hype. I love that they're bringing the whole nine realms and the world tree in, because now we've got like multiverses inside of our multiverses. So that's going to be, and just in terms of how much lore they, in theory, could do, I mean, there's easily, there's 300-400 page novels that could be done on Kaldheim if they, you know, if they want to go there. But we don't know yet if the realm will be popular enough for that, but it absolutely could be done.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think that's probably going to end up, well, hoping the full trailer actually has more rock metal music, because there wasn't much in the teaser. And if we're going to do this, we just got to turn that knob to 11, because that's what you're trying to pitch us, right?
That's right. It goes to 11.
But I will say, it is a little disappointing when you see us enter to a new world and only have one set to explore it, right? Like, yeah. Ikoria is a good example. You had Mutate as a thing, but you really only have one set. So you have to jam everything in or cut some things or whatever. And we're just not going to see any more of it for probably at least 3 years, 4 years minimum before we come back to Ikoria. Yeah. And in some ways, is it possible that the wrong things got cut or whatever from Eldraine? Right? That's a question to ask. Like, could there have been more things to balance out some of those things, the powerful cards or whatever, or problematic cards, if we had a second set to work with or a third set, how we used to have old blocks? Now, I don't know. Maybe not. Some of the stuff that got put out was crazy powerful. But I just feel there's more to explore with a lot of this stuff, that some mechanics get left out when we're only doing, or some exploration gets left out when we're only doing one set.
Because I believe it was Saffron Olive who I saw say, you know, we banned like what I think the top five or six worst cards, or I guess technically the best cards from Eldraine. And then cards 6 through 10 immediately become the top five cards in the format.
Yeah. But here's the thing too, speaking to your point, like looking at the trailer, you know, the whole world tree and the nine realms and the swords and all this, it's like, well, are we gonna feel as a player or a viewer, consumer, fulfilled after one set worth of story? Right? And maybe some of that is purposely done, so when we come back, it's like, oh yeah, we get to see what happened to this character, or we get to see what happened to this item, or whatever. But that's a long time to wait.
Yeah.
But I thought overall, the teaser was well done. You know, I was immediate, my first thought was that it was the actual trailer, and I was a bit disappointed. Because when you think about the Ikoria trailer, and it had that really like amped up music, you know, and she's like slaying these big monsters and everything, and that was kind of cool. And then, of course, we had the War of the Spark one, which was way over the top.
Oh, yeah.
Both of those, not just that, actually, the Eldraine one as well, because that was the one that had the gingerbread people and Garrick and all that.
That may be my favorite one out of all the ones that I've seen so far. The Eldraine one with the, you know, with psychotic gingerbread lady.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, those gave a clear, I don't know, like just, it, like they evoked what these sets were, right? You saw it. you watch it and you immediately were like, okay, I know what this set's about. Like when you watched War of the Spark, it was like, okay, there's what's his name? The white planeswalker, like saving Liliana. There's,
oh yeah, Gideon.
Yeah, there's Nicol Bolas up top. Like you could see the whole narrative playing out. Like this is what we're building up to. With Ikoria, like I said, it was Vivian coming to rescue her monster and take down this other big monster, and then there's one behind that, you know. And I was like, okay, obviously this is going to be about big creatures, and you know, okay, cool. Same thing with Eldraine. It was, here's some storybook stuff with some gingerbread people and the setting. You could see all, you know, just the scene was set perfectly, so you knew what type of world it was. We were getting Garrick back, which was part of a story. So I'm hoping we get that in a full trailer here to just say like, hey, here's these cool types of characters that are here. Here's the look and the motif of just like the armor and the Celtic knots or whatever it is that we're doing. And I hope it lives up to that because it has a lot of potential. With that being done, I do want to give people an update while we have a quick break here in the show about this whole YouTube wage theft thing. Because as it turns out, we are now a couple months past, I guess, the first time I mentioned this. And interestingly, everybody seems to be being paid for the last 28, 30 days.
That's a good thing.
No major problems. I myself have had money deposited in with no major issues. I will say that also my CPM and RPM are up. However, I don't know if that's just because it's the holidays. This is the first like Christmas season I have been through. So I would assume these numbers are going to come back down to normal sometime around the first or second week of January. And then we'll see. But as of now, there's no action being taken. I think there's been a couple of stories run, but no type of lawsuit or mention or anything of the months of September and October that everybody lost money on. Well, I say everybody. A bunch of people lost money on up to this point. But I don't know what to do with that. I mean, for me, like I said, it's a small enough amount of money that it wouldn't be worth fighting over. I would spend probably like six times as much to try to get it. So I'm not going to worry about it. But we'll see. But for now, it seems like that situation is at least in the rearview mirror and things are functioning normally as they should be. So we'll see how that goes.
And I, as of yet, you know, don't have an experience on it yet because I'm not monetized, which I guess in a way is, you know, they can't steal my money if they haven't paid me any, but I still want my friends that are monetized to get, and not even just my friends, but everybody that earned that money. I want everybody to get the money that they're owed, obviously.
Oh, of course. I'll also say I have been like peeping over at your channel. You're getting a few more views and a few more subscribers here the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. There was some, you and a couple of other people gave me some social media shout outs. Then we just had, you know, a topic that was a very hot topic in video gaming. I mean, it's, the comments on that thing are still going. So I'm still talking to people, good and bad.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, one of the things I do want to say to anyone listening is if you find something, some work, some content that somebody has done to be good, even better and good, like there's a lot of times people will tell you, man, this thing really touched me. Like this thing you did really spoke to me. Or, hey, I'm glad you're talking about this because this is a thing I don't think a lot of people know about or whatever. Share that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I try to do that all the time. If I see a thing that I think people should know about or a bit of news or politics or whatever that people don't know, like, put it on your Facebook, put it on your Twitter feed. You know, if you're in some message groups or forums or whatever, share it with people where it's relevant, obviously, but help those people get the exposure. You know, like, let's build up the people that are sharing those stories, the people that have that content. Like, help those people grow because, and, you know, I've benefited from it where somebody like the professor was like, hey, I like what you're doing. Why don't we get together, shoot a couple videos, do a thing. Great. Now, granted, it wasn't like my channel just blew up because I did a thing with them, but it was still like 200-300 subscribers that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And some of them hung around and people watch my other stuff. And that's not nothing. You know, people, And if I can direct people to somebody else's channel or their video or their Instagram or whatever, and they get 20, 30 new subscribers, well, great. I helped.
Yeah.
You know, and that's less that person has to struggle for. And who knows? Maybe somebody else who finds them has an even bigger platform and they share it with more people or whatever. There's a big domino effect there that can happen. And we talk all the time. You know, they tell you in business that you're going to see something like 10 complaints for every one compliment.
So
you know,
true.
People are... Yeah, if people are mad, well, you know, like if somebody didn't like one of your stories, you were probably going to have 15 emails about it.
Oh, yeah. I have people wrote something, tell me I cost them the election. Like, I wish I had that power. I promise you, I don't feel like I do.
Well, yeah, but see, that's exactly it, right? But they weren't sharing, hey, you should go check out this story on this website this guy wrote when you write something profound. They would just read it, probably, and yeah. Just go, man, that was a nice, well-written story. And then that's it.
Story about the chamber auction. Yeah, they tell nobody in most cases.
Yeah, and that's sort of how I feel sometimes, right? I'll read the YouTube comments on my stuff, and there'll be people like, oh, this was so good, or this was really fun, or, you know, it's cool you're sharing this type of video, or whatever, and then nothing, no activity, right? And I'm just like, man, that's so crazy. So, yeah. Also, don't think that because you don't have a platform, like a big platform, that you have none, because you do, right? I'm slowly getting an audience on like YouTube or whatever, but there's some other things I'm on where I don't have that bigger reach. But you know what? I still share stuff. And inevitably there's somebody who is appreciative, or there's somebody that's like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Or, oh, it's cool you turned me on to that. Hell, I had a friend from back home who does artwork. And he owned his own little ad company and this, that. But, you know, COVID happened and he's kind of repositioning his position, it looks like. And he was just doing stuff for like t-shirts and whatnot and cool like tapestry type things or whatever. And he has them on one of these sites. I can't remember, like an Etsy type site that you can go buy his designs and stuff. So he had a couple of cool ones and I just shared them. And he sent me a message later and was like, dude, just from sharing that, I think he said something like 20 more people following me this morning and, you know, a couple of orders or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Right? Like, I'm not the biggest person on Twitter by any stretch of the imagination. But even that little bit helps somebody else out. And believe me, we are super appreciative. Every time I see something with like our podcast shared or one of our YouTube channels shared, like, I'm always thankful.
Every time anybody asked me, you know, who had a cool store, I would always tell them, hey, if you're ever in Waco, or honestly, if you've never been to Waco to play cards, you absolutely should go there to the card store.
Yeah, and that pays dividends in the long run. I mean, just having a handful of people saying, yeah, stop at this place, go do this thing. You know, and maybe that's it too, right? That should apply to everything, not even just content. Like if you, even more so if it's a marginalized group, you know, because they are likely to get less attention. They're likely to have a smaller network, definitely fewer people involved, probably in major sectors of business. So anything you can do to help them is awesome. And all right, since we're on the holiday kind of episode here, let's do something a little bit different. And Brian, you wanted to ask a couple of questions. So what we're going to do is Brian's going to ask a couple of questions blind because I have not seen these questions yet, and I'm going to answer them live.
Okay. Well, the main one I had was, you know, for somebody that, I mean, I like to think I'm keeping up with what's going on in Magic, but it just how do you keep up with, you know, the events and the tournaments? Because I feel like at this point there's almost something going on every single weekend, but I feel like I don't hear about a lot of them until Mondays come and people have already played it. Is there a good site or resource or someplace, you know, that lists everything that there is going on right now?
I would say really there's two things. The best thing, I guess there's three. Like the first is just Wizard site, and you have to do the deep dive to go find like Magic Online and the tournaments upcoming and all that, right? Because there are events there. Granted, I don't play on Magic Online, but that is where a lot of your tournament results are going to come from for different things. But you can also use MTG Melee. Like, a lot of people, I think, go to try to look at tournament results, but you can also look at upcoming events. So a lot of people will go in and schedule their stuff, you know, a week or 2 weeks in advance so people can go sign up. So the day of, they're ready to rock and roll. So that's one way I know when things are coming up. I can just hop into MTG Melee, look at stuff coming up in the next 2 weeks. You can even look, like, I think you can go and check it by, like, format and different things as well. So that's another way you can give yourself a little bit of an edge there to just know what's happening. The last thing I would say is, as you see events come up, bookmark the sources for those events, whether it's their website, their Twitter account, whatever, because you have groups like the VML, right? They're just taking signups for their fourth season, I believe it is. There's Swagoi does an event for, I did commentary for them a couple of times for their, like, set roulette, and they do weekly tournaments and whatnot. The Mythic Society is the website, but that's another one, right? So if you know those are going on, cool, just bookmark them. You can check them like every 2 weeks, see their calendar, see what's coming up. But that's kind of the best way to do it, because you're, especially right now with the pandemic being a thing, there's fewer really large events. Right now there's like a lot of small to mid-size events, but they're happening all the time. And that's another thing too. If you want to play events, you can literally go hop in MTG Melee and play a tournament for like $5 or less. There's a lot of free events that are running, and some of them even give prizes. Not a lot of prizes because they're free, but, you know, there's a lot of free events that give away like $30 to $50 in prizes. Cool. If you got time to kill in the afternoon, hop into an event with like 16 or 20 people. You go 4-0, 3-1, great. Maybe you get like $15 store credit or something. But yeah, lots going on. I agree with you. There is a lot going on, and it's a lot to keep up with. But those would be my... that honestly, MTG Melee is probably your best source for the majority of the events you're going to want to know about. And then as you see the events pop up, just bookmark the sources for those events is probably what I'd recommend.
Okay. And I've played in a couple of MTG Melee's events or events that they were helping run, and I can confirm they are awesome.
That's a good question. I like that one. So do you have any others?
No, that was my main one. I think okay. I believe you had one about kind of what games people like to play around.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to bring up for you, especially because you've got a family of folks that hang out at your place during the holidays. So what games do you traditionally play for during the Christmas holiday or Christmas break, actually, because you have your kids there for 2 weeks, you know, during the school year?
Uno, I think, is that's a big one. I find it's pretty, I guess, almost universal. Well, I can't say universal because almost nothing is universal, but I know definitely, I know a lot of people I know in the Black community love some Uno. That's one that we get a lot of Uno going on. My kids also love Smash Up by, I want to say, I'm forgetting the publisher, but Smash Up is a really fun game, and it's not, as many people have pointed out, it's not that different from Jumpstart. So if you like Jumpstart, you would probably also like Smash Up.
That is a good one. Smash Up's actually pretty popular. I think they have like 5 expansions or something.
Oh, so
there's a lot of different...
It's probably closer to 15 or 20 now. They are cranking them out. Just then there's promo cards too. Cause I think I have a sheep faction that's a promo that I got just for having their newsletter and taking a survey or something. So yeah, there's a bunch of, and I again, for anybody that has kids, I would absolutely recommend it because my youngest is 10 and she's been playing it for 2 years at this point. So it's very easy to pick up and play for all.
Yeah, ages. That is a good one. And it's like a soft draft because you're, like you're saying, it's very much like the Jumpstart where you're just like, okay, yeah. I drafted these two groups and then I play those two groups together and then just play the game out from there. But it's funny you bring up Uno, because I've kind of wondered that, like how Uno became the official family card game of the Black family, because I don't even know. I just know that every Black person I know has played probably a couple thousand games of Uno.
I think because it's everywhere. I mean, you can pick up Uno at your local Walmart. It's now, you know, with some of these other games, like even Monopoly, you know, maybe your local store might be out of copies, but Uno, man, I mean, you see Uno in gas stations. Uno is everywhere.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, actually, maybe that's a real question, because, I mean, it sounds a little dumb, but for those of you that happen to be... Actually, you know what? I'll just put it in a tweet just to see, like... Because I'm curious, like, how many families of color, I guess, have actually played a lot of Uno versus those that aren't? Because I've never asked. I know when I was growing up, my family played way more Uno than, like, my white friend's family. But, like, they had played Uno and they knew what it was. So, yeah. Like, I don't really know.
I was also going to say, this isn't new. I've been playing it. I played Uno when I was a kid. You know, my kids are playing it. I'm assuming one day probably my grandkids will be playing it. It just...
Oh, dude, I used to play Uno with my cousins. And, like, literally, we'd do that thing where, like, you wanted to play with the big kids. It's like, fine, but you don't get to cry when you lose.
Like, exactly. And there is, like, a fine brand of trash talk that's around it. That's kind of why it became a meme.
Yeah. You know,
do such and such or draw 25.
Oh, seriously. And that's the thing. Like, no, it didn't matter if you were 5, 15, or 50. You get treated the same playing games in my family. Yeah. And I'll be damned if you sit down and try to play spades or bid whisk or something with, like, the old people at the table, like, and you mess up and don't know the rules or whatever, like, you're going to hear it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, that's actually kind of fun, man. So it's cool that y'all actually have even some, you know, I would say, like, non-regular, like, mass market games that you're playing together.
There's one that I actually, you know, I got it as a Christmas gift. We've gone ahead and opened it, you know, since we're all stuck in here together. There's a WWF Royal Rumble card game that I literally just found out about.
Oh, you actually, there's another one. I literally just saw this the other day. I forgot what it's dang it. It's something like something paper scissors, like maybe slam paper scissors or something like that. But okay. It's done by WizKids, I'm pretty sure. So the people that make HeroClix and stuff. But it's done with cards, and you're doing different hand symbols for, like, rock, paper, scissors, and certain things beat other things. And then you get bonuses depending on the character, and you're trying to get up the ladder for, I guess, the money in the bank thing. And it actually looks good. It sounds hokey as hell, but it actually looks really good, and you could probably play it with all your kids.
Yeah. I've got to check that out. WizKids is coming up with some interesting licenses, to be certain.
Yeah, the only problem I have with that game is that if they decide to not renew the license, it kind of goes dead and you can't keep adding characters to it, which is unfortunate. But outside of that, I'd rock and roll with it.
We had that problem with our old favorite Raw Deal.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of people still playing Raw Deal, because I have friends, you know, that are still... selling cards. So there are pockets where Raw Deal is apparently still going as strong as it ever was. I just unfortunately am not near any of those pockets.
Oh, dude, they made like 3 fan sets even after the original was done.
If they could do like a digital version of that, they could take so much of my money. If anybody from, you know, whoever the WWE licensing is listening, you could take my money tomorrow for some digital Raw Deal. Or if you want to bring the original back, you can take my money on that, too.
True. Okay, Brian. Since we're talking about things, and the games you talked about were actually pretty affordable, really, for a lot of people. So one of the things I wanted to bring up for our discussion is it's a little light for the dinner table, but I think it's an important discussion. Is how important do you feel that it is? Or maybe even what is the importance of having budget options available in gaming?
That is a good question. And I mean, I think it is huge because, you know, you can't, to me, you know, you're not going to be able to get to or to reach, especially young people, if all of your games, you know, cost $70 a piece and require a machine that cost you $600 or $700. You know, it's just you can't, well, I guess the industry technically can survive that way, but you're going to leave out a lot of people.
Yeah, and it's funny, right? Because on the one hand, especially let's say we're talking about video games, there's not really a way to do budget video games, right? Your systems are expensive. You know, the low-end system is going to be $200. A top-end new system is probably going to be $500, $600. Now, I will say, they are getting to where you can have downloadable games, which are, I guess, be cheaper than the $60 games you used to buy. So that's an upgrade.
The Switch, I guess you would say, budget in comparison to, say, the PS5 or the Xbox, either series. But still, $200 bucks more.
Yeah, you're going to be in about $250 all in to have a, like, playable bundle for the Switch.
I will tell people, you know, if they're looking for those other consoles and can't get them, and for some reason your family doesn't have a Switch, I'd say I don't think anybody at your house will be upset if you bring them a Switch. You can't be. It's just an awesome product.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons Nintendo has maintained popularity. That, because even now, like, I'm one of the people that I, outside of maybe Madden, you know, I haven't played that many new games within like 6 months of their release. So for me to own one of the new game systems isn't all that exciting, right? Because I'm not going to have all the new stuff while it's hyped. It's just because of the, and it's not even because of money particularly, but because of just how my personal schedule works out.
Yeah.
I have to budget time to spend on video games.
I hear you. This is the first time where I've, you know, probably never, I would say probably, I've never been more, you know, financially prepared to buy a console, but because, you know, pandemic happened, I just literally can't get my hands on one. You know, I saved up all the money this time, and you got to shank somebody to buy one.
Yeah. Hell, I saw a thing, MKBHD shared a thing where he had a picture with like six of them. He's just going to do Christmas giveaways apparently tomorrow. But for me, it's like I have been considering getting a Switch because I'm like, well, it's much cheaper than the other ones. If I even get games secondhand or whatever, I won't necessarily feel bad if I don't play them immediately. So even just the budget option existing still leaves room for me to enjoy that category without feeling bad about it. You know, and granted, it's not like I'm rolling in dough right now, but it's also not like if I made the budget to get a PlayStation or an Xbox, you know, the new ones, it wouldn't kill me, but I also know I wouldn't get as much use out of it. So I'm less inclined to do it. But then, you know, when we're talking about non-video games, because video games, no matter what, kind of have just a set price across the board. Like, you know, you're going to pay so much for systems, you know, you're going to pay so much for games, unless you buy them used.
I will say that for anybody that doesn't have like Xbox Game Pass, it's basically Netflix for video games. It's absolutely worth it. You pay, I want to say, $10 a month, and you've got access to it. As I said, it's like Netflix. It's a digital library of a couple of 100 games you can play at your leisure, as long as you remember.
Now, can you pay extra to download and keep those games?
A lot of them will have a discount, like, hey, if you like it and you're an Xbox Game Pass member, it's 20% off or 30% off or what have you.
See, that I could get behind, because then I'm just paying a flat fee to try things out. And then if I want it, I can download. Because my concern would be like, oh, but what if I don't finish in time and then they rotate this in 3 months or something? But yeah, if I could pay like an extra, I don't know, $30 and keep it, that'd be cool.
I've tried so many things I would have never even gotten around to trying because hey, it's free to play. Let me download it, try it, see if I like it.
Well, and see, that alone is a bigger reason for me to get an Xbox than a PlayStation.
Because that's what, well, actually, PlayStation has a thing too, PlayStation Plus, where you don't get, you know, the huge Netflix model, but every month they give you, I think, at least two or three free games. Taylor, not free because you paid for a membership, but three games you can download per se. They're not all great, you know, they're largely free.
Sure. Now let's step away from video games for a second. So like I said, since that's mostly set, the prices are what they are. Now, when we start talking about tabletop games and card games, like, how important are budget options there? And do budgets even matter as much?
I believe it does, because like we just talked about, you know, things, you'll try anything at the right price. I picked up a board game a couple of months ago it was at Barnes & Noble on clearance for $5. I didn't know it existed. I'd have never played it had it not been on the clearance rack for $5. My kids actually love it.
Huh. Yeah, and here's funny, because, you know, I've thought about this with Magic before, that part of me, I feel like, you need budget options to exist. Kind of coming back to that original discussion, right? If we're going to help people build decks in Arena or whatever, what does a budget deck look like? Like, how do we take care of those people that don't have the resources or the money to spend or whatever? But if those aren't going to be top level decks anyway in a card game, are they that important? Or are they still important because at least give somebody a tool so they can at least try out the tournament system and competitive gaming and see if it's for them, and then invest in a, I don't know, rare heavy or expensive card heavy deck, right? Like, I don't know. It's an interesting conversation, though, I think, to have. And I think it should always be there, because you don't want to, it's tough, right? Because we have people say that there's, I don't know, that it's racist and gatekeeping and whatever for games to be pricey. And on some level, I think that's true. But I don't think it's necessary to the same point some of the people that are saying it try to make it out to be. Because at some point, they do have to sell things, right? Like, you have to have, unfortunately, it's capitalism, right? You've got to have a thing to sell that people are going to buy so you can pay people to keep making that thing. Like, that's just how it works. And if you're not turning a profit, you're not going to be able to have the resources and everything to do that. But you also don't want people to look at it and go, well, there's no way I can play this because every deck costs $500, or every good deck in Arena needs 28 rares or mythics or whatever, right? Like, that would probably turn people off. So I do think you have to have budget options available.
Yeah.
But I think the importance may not always be the same at every point in time for every item. If that makes sense.
And as somebody pointed out to me, you know, time is also money. Because I was talking about, you know, how I was able to, was lucky enough to have a comic shop down the street from my house where I could learn to play games. But I was telling people, you know, look, my mom was a teacher. She was a lot of times a single parent. I didn't have a lot of necessarily money to spend. But then one of my friends was like, yeah, but you had, you know, I mean, you had time, right? There's a comic shop down the street within walking distance. Think about how many kids didn't have that. Like, you're right. If you got to take 3 trains to get to a comic shop, you probably can't play the same game I can play.
Now that's a good point, you know, and that's one thing I've tried to point out to people when they're talking about renting versus buying and everything else. And part of there's really 2 parts of my conversation. Most people who say they can't buy a house, I always ask them, well, how much are you paying for rent? And usually I'm like, great. Well, you could just be buying a house for like an extra $150, $200 a month. Like, if you're willing to move or be in a different spot or whatever. And then the conversation becomes, what does that amount of time cost you? Because obviously, like, there's a cost of gas or insurance or, I don't know, if you commute far, oil changes and all that, but just time itself. What do you value your time at? Because I'm with you. Like, the fact that when it's non-pandemic season, right, I have a game store I can go to that's literally like 8 minutes from my house. That is super convenient. Like, I can, on a whim, any part of the day, if I want to go play Magic, go trade cards, go pick up comic books, go pick up a present or something when I'm going to a party or get together, literally just down the road. Super convenient. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to invest any amount of time. Like, even that is something that you should figure into your budget. Like, what is your time worth? Especially when we're talking about digital games, right? Whether that's Arena or Clash of Clans or anything. right? That's the other thing. If you're not spending dollars, you're spending time. And that has a value. Like, what is that worth to you?
And if you want to play well, as we discussed, it's a full-time job with a game like Magic. Or I think almost technically any game, if you would like to play it well enough to play at a, even to win consistently at Friday Night Magic, you're putting some time in.
Yeah. You know, I've said it before. Like I knew some people who were trying to be competitive video gamers, and they were playing first-person shooters, and they literally had, like, their regimen looked like a football team schedule. It was, you know, do this, wake up, you know, make sure you exercise. Today on the docket, we're going to cover, I think at the time when I talked to them, it was like headshots or whatever with guns. Mm-hmm. So they were literally just doing like 4 hours of, all right, they just released new maps. So you go out to this spot and then get progressively further. So they even know with every single gun where they can even attempt to make a headshot.
But yeah, I saw one Overwatch player where he would, I think he does like aim training for an hour. Then he goes into a quick play for about another hour. Only after 2 hours of practice does he play competitively. And he's one of the best players in the world. He starts out better than 99% of the people he plays against, but still, 2 hours before he plays against you or me, you know, on a game.
And see, and then that's another thing too, right? Like, considering time has a cost, is that a budget option? Is there a budget option to play competitively? Probably not in most things.
Really not, unless you just happen to be, you know, there are some people who are prodigies, they can pick it up faster. But for most of us, we're not all, you know, just to, I mean, we're not all pro Magic players, pro Overwatch players, you know, we're not.
There's some cost that changes or creates a separation between people of similar, even like abilities, right? If you're, for me, it was like being in track. And understanding that, oh, okay, well, there's different quality shoes, even for different types of events you run, or like if you're a long jumper or whatever. And then there's different spikes you use in your shoes. So you got to be able to have different options to switch out. And then those get worn down if you practice in them. So you have to replace those. And then maybe you're practicing with leg weights. So you want to get a set of those, right? There's all these things that the people competing at the top end are going to have either dollars or time to invest in those things. So I do think budget options have to exist for people to at least try your product or enjoy it on a casual level. Because not obviously for 90% of what we do, none of us are going to be competitive at those things. We just want to have fun doing it with our friends.
Yeah. Or create content, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I think it's an interesting conversation. I think people try to make it very black and white, you know, but I think there's a lot of levels to it. Both depending on the type of item we're talking about and the level the person's trying to engage with the item. But before we wrap things up here today, I do want to let people know about a thing. I know some people have been like, hey, why don't you've had some guests on and this, that, and the other. So part of it has been that we have had trouble locking up schedules. Like the pandemic, for as much as people have been at home, has changed a lot of people's schedules pretty significantly. A lot of people have extra projects. There's people trying to manage new types of technology, rewrite things for their jobs because they're operating completely differently. And that's created some problems. And sometimes we've had people available, but they weren't available on the days we were. And, you know, then we had people lined up that we've had to move. So it's been easier to kind of skip around it. However, we do have news in the world that vaccines are now rolling out to everybody. So I do have an epidemiologist that listens to the show that I've been in contact with. We are waiting for him to get approvals because for a lot of people that you don't know, if you work for a major company or research group or whatever, before you say anything to the public, you have to have all your higher ups basically green light and say, yes, we have no problem with you doing it. Or if you do it, you can only say these things, right? So we're waiting for those approvals to come through. We're hoping by Monday or Tuesday next week, we'll have that and we have him on the show. If not, we do have a backup person that we can potentially talk to. And locally, I do know of a person that's in the health field, a nurse, and another person that is in the social worker community that's had to help out with ER stuff right now because of how bad the pandemic's been. And they have each already had vaccines. So I'm reaching out to them to see if they're willing to come on for a few minutes and just talk about the process as well. Two reasons I want to do this. The first is just to shape the conversation and talk about what can we expect moving forward. Like, what's the timeline expectation for people getting vaccines? What's the process like? You know, when should we be expecting to get back to gaming publicly? What does that look like for us? You know, having that part of the conversation. But the other is, there's also a lot of resources, or a lot of sources, just telling people a bunch of different information. Some people may or may not trust it. Some people just may not see it. And one of the things I do believe is sometimes you have to put big information in channels that people are already engaging with because they may not see it any other way. So to that end, I will be starting a tweet or tweet thread over on Twitter. And also, if you're already a Discord member, because you support the show over on Patreon, obviously we'll be talking about it there. But what we'll be looking for is questions from you that you want to know that we can have these people answer. So if there's something you're curious about as far as just the process, the time, the cost, anything you've heard in the news, whatever, we will try to get that in front of them. We are going to prioritize questions from our patrons, obviously, but we're going to try to work in as many questions as we can from all sources as best we can, and see that through and at least help give y'all some good information. So just know that we are working on that for the next couple of days. Hopefully it comes to be. But with that, Brian, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media when you're not doing a podcast?
All right. I am DL Caesar on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, and our family channel is Alan's Ever After. So by all means, come by and celebrate Vlogmas with us.
And you can always find me at Power Dragon, PowerDragn, on just about all major platforms. And you can come by and see my YouTube channel where I have stuff up every day of the week and streaming three times a week over on Twitch. But as usual, wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And for a little longer, even if you think it's dumb, do it for the rest of us. Wear your mask, wash your hands. Stay away from other humans for a little longer so we can get back to gaming sooner rather than later.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.